And welcome back to The Ed Show. I'm joined today by John Howard, and we're going to be talking about Generation 2 virtual machines with Hyper-V. John, give us a quick introduction.
Thanks, Simon. My name's John Howard. I'm a program manager in the Hyper-V team. I've worked in a team for 8 years now, predominantly in the devices area, and more recently looking at Generation 2 virtual machines.
Nice. So devices and Generation 2 virtual machine, I guess I see a lot of similarities here because a lot of the changes we see with Generation 2 are new adapters, new supported components, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of ways you can look at what Generation 2 virtual machines
are. Let's get the overview here.
Okay, so perhaps it's easier just to go a little bit of history first to understand this. So if we look at where virtualization solutions have come from in the past, a lot of them were geared around trying to make as many operating systems run in a virtual machine as they could. So for that reason, we use a lot of emulated devices in there that you would find in actual physical machines. Mm-hmm. So that means that no change was necessary to the operating system in order for them to run. Now, we added certain features that enabled those virtual machines to run better as a virtual machine through software-based devices and VM bus and all the architecture that we have around device land in Hyper-V. But still, fundamentally, some building blocks of that virtual machine were still emulated devices. So one of the things we wanted to do was like look to where we want to go in the future and say, well, we can probably get rid of a lot of this emulation devices. They're very inefficient. They expose a security attack surface there. They're not really necessary. And while we're there at the same time, we also looked at the firmware of a virtual machine. So if you look historically at most client machines up until physical client machines until 2 or 3 years ago, they were all BIOS-based machines. Mm-hmm. That was the same with our Generation 1 virtual machine. With Generation 2, we've moved to UEFI firmware as the firmware for the virtual machine itself.
Great, great. Okay. So Gen 2, what's different then? What's been added with this release?
So it's easy to explain it in what's been taken away.
Okay, let's take it away here. So how about that pesky legacy network adapter?
That's definitely gone. So nice. Perhaps if we flick over to the screen behind me on my desktop here. So here I'm running Windows 8.1. I've got Hyper-V Manager here. I've got a couple of virtual machines. I've actually got four, but focus on Generation 1 and Generation 2. They are exactly what they say, Generation 1 and Generation 2. So if we look at the settings, for example, for a Generation 1 virtual machine, we can see, for example, down here we have an IDE controller and it's booting off an IDE controller. It's got a DVD device that's attached to an IDE controller as well. We have an optional SCSI controller. One is always created by default by Hyper-V. We've got some COM ports as well. These are serial ports, in effect, for the virtual machine. We've got a diskette drive for floppies. And if we like select add hardware, we can see, for example, we've got the legacy network adapter as an option if you want to do Pixie installation as well. And finally, if we go to like the BIOS, and it's clearly marked BIOS, it's pretty limited in how you can change the boot order. Mm-hmm. So if we now look at a Generation 2 virtual machine and see, at least from a settings perspective in Hyper-V, what it looks like.
It's a little trimmer. I noticed that off the bat. There's fewer things, right?
There's significantly less in there. So now you can see on the hardware, we no longer have the legacy network adapter, for example. We have a firmware tab instead of the BIOS. So in this tab here, we can actually see one of the new features in Generation 2 virtual machine, which is Secure Boot. Now, Secure Boot is actually part of the UEFI specification. We just implement Secure Boot in addition.
What is Secure Boot? Why is that interesting?
So Secure Boot is a means that enables Windows or an operating system to trust the platform all the way through the Ring Zero components until the operating system is actually loaded. So we guarantee that there's no malware in that initial boot path.
Okay.
So also you can see the boot order, that's significantly extended here. We have some fairly complex, which you don't need to be too worried about. We have some device paths for any device that's attached essentially to that virtual machine. From a boot perspective, we only have the SCSI controller. The IDE controller is gone now, so it's booting from SCSI. And the reason it can boot from SCSI in this case and a Generation 1 cannot is that the UEFI firmware is aware, it has a device driver effectively for the synthetic SCSI controller that we have in Hyper-V. We also have a new DVD device, whereas previously the DVD device was only attached to an IDE controller, and now it's only attached, can only be attached to a SCSI controller if we don't have a IDE controller in there. We've actually taken a couple of bits away as well. So for example, a DVD drive can no longer use a physical DVD device. You're going to use an ISO file as it currently stands.
So, I mean, with a DVD drive, you know, what happens if I wanted to use, let's say, a PowerShell command, like add a new DVD drive? Is it the same command if I'm doing it to a generation one, generation two?
It's very similar. The only difference is you have to specify the SCSI controller as opposed to the IDE controller.
But great, but there's no whole separate set of PowerShell commandlets for these two.
No, it's fundamentally the same.
Nice. Yeah.
So that's how you kind of view the virtual machine from the outside in Hyper-V. And if I flick over to the actual virtual machines itself, we can see a couple of different things. So I've got VM Connect open and running. So if I look at the Generation 1 virtual machine, for example, this may be a little small to read, but here I'm showing disk management and showing the boot disk. And I've showed the properties for it. Here we can see in the Generation 1 virtual machine, it's an MBR master boot record type layout. And if we look at exactly the same on a Generation 2 virtual machine, it's actually GPT, or GUI partition table. So by GPT, that also means that we can have very large volumes for the boot volume, whereas in a Generation 1 virtual machine, it was limited. I can't remember the exact number. I think it was 2.2 terabytes, I believe.
Nice.
Okay. So we can go.
Okay, though, yeah. That's a great overview. But was there an architectural reason why you didn't just add these features like Secure Boot into the Generation 1 VM? Why do we have to have these two separate versions?
Secure Boot, very specifically, is a very good reason, because Secure Boot is part of the UEFI specification. So it's not part of BIOS.
Okay.
So we
great
have,
reason.
We,
so they architecturally just have to be different building
they are.
From the ground.
And also, when you actually look at some of the features that we wanted to add, and we do want to add even more features in the future, anything that affects changing our PC80 BIOS is difficult, it's flawed, it's a lot of things could potentially go wrong if we change our PC80 BIOS. So, and the reason for that predominantly is that it's written in assembler, a 16-bit assembler, and it's just very difficult to maintain that features. And there really isn't enough even space to actually put this additional capability in, like trying to build a device driver for VMBus and all our other devices, putting it into BIOS is an incredibly difficult engineering exercise. Whereas we move to UEFI firmware, it's written in high-level language C, it's very easy to adapt and extend.
Nice. So let's talk about support of Generation 2 then. Hyper-V Server, it's the free version of Hyper-V.
Yes.
People download it offline, it supports, you know, clusters, virtual machines.
Yep.
Generation 2, is that supported?
Absolutely.
As well?
So Hyper-V Server is no different to Windows Server 2012 R2 or Windows 8.1 client. Any SKU that supports Hyper-V will support both Generation 1 and Generation 2 virtual machines.
And you did say including the client 8.1.
And it's client as well. In fact, this is what I'm running the demo on here. It's a client-based Windows 8.1.
Nice. Now, what about Virtual Machine Manager? Can you manage Generation 2
Absolutely,
VMs
yeah.
just like Gen 1?
Absolutely, yes.
Right, no difference.
That capability has been added, yes.
How about deployment through different self-service portals, like the Windows Azure Pack, App Controller, Service Manager portal?
It should be no different. If they can deploy a Generation 1 virtual machine, it should be no different.
Great. Monitoring it with Operations Manager.
That's exactly the same as well, yes.
And backing up with DPM?
And that's the same as well.
Great. Yeah. So I guess from a management perspective, we should consider it just like a Gen 1, except it has these added features.
It has added features. The only things that you have to be aware of is a deployment time. So you have to specify it's either a Generation 1 or a Generation 2 virtual machine. But once it's created, you pretty much manage it exactly the same.
So it seems like, you know, there's a lot of benefits from using Generation 2 virtual machines.
Yes,
but a lot of our customers are already on Gen 1.
Correct.
From what I've seen, there's no inbox way to go and move from Generation 1 to Generation 2. But you have some type of tool, right?
I do. It probably needs a little bit more depth to try and understand why there's no tool and what some of the complications are in the conversion. So if you take two physical servers, one's running BIOS-based, PC80 BIOS-based, and one is UEFI-based, chances are if you take the boot disk out of server A that's got an operating system on it and put it into server B that's running UEFI, it's very unlikely to boot, highly unlikely. And it's no different between Generation 1 and Generation 2. So there are ways around it. If you follow certain documentation we've got in the deployment, the ADK deployment kit, and other tools, you can convert manually, very long-winded, from a Generation 1 or a PC80 system to a Generation 2 UEFI-based system. And the mechanism, essentially what you would do is you would capture an image of the original machine, you would prepare a new disk that's able to boot in UEFI for the new machine, and you'd apply the image that you captured to that Generation 2 or the UEFI.
So
machine.
It's not like as easy as just copying metadata over
no,
between
it's
two
not
files
at all.
Or
so
anything.
There are some fundamental differences that you have to overcome.
So how would one go about actually doing that conversion process?
Well, the easiest way is using a tool. And so it does take some time to run. What I'm showing on the screen here, this is one that I ran earlier. So it's a bit like a cookery show. And
sure.
So.
First, maybe tell me, where can people get this tool from? Is it a Coplex thing, or?
It's on code.msdn.microsoft.com. The URL is up here. It's Convert VM Generation. So right.
We'll post a link in the recording to that as well.
So anybody can go and download this tool. This is something I wrote back over the last few months.
You have too much free time.
I have too much free time, clearly. So if I just run through the major steps of what it's doing, it's effectively what I'm doing. So for example, so how I've run it, I just say convert, VM generation, and then the name of a virtual machine. It's going to convert me. So it looks for the virtual machine. It makes sure that it is a virtual machine container that can actually run as a generation 2, because generation 2 don't support all the operating systems that a generation 1 virtual machine does. Finds the boot disks. Determines that, in this case, I was running Windows 8, Windows 8.1, in this case, as the source operating system. And then it creates a new VHDX for the Generation 2 virtual machine, the new one in this case. And then it formats it when you get this big warning saying, I'm about to format a disk, and I really didn't want to have people blast past that. So it gives a big warning to say, I'm now going to go and format a disk, so please be very careful at this point. And then essentially what it does is this step down here says, capturing the image will take some time. So this is where it's sucking all the information out into a WIM file from the generation 1 source VHD or VHDX.
Is this what takes the most time, that step?
This is the time-consuming part. So once it's captured it, it then does the reverse, which is the apply, and it probably takes just about as long. And obviously, the time it takes is going to depend highly on how fast your disk is, how much data there is to actually suck out and apply back.
So just a ballpark type of time, let's say I have, I don't know, like a 10 gigabyte VM, are we saying this might take on the order of minutes or hours to kind of go through that process?
As I say, that's so difficult. I would.
Oh, easy question. Standard hardware, right?
Yeah, everybody's got their standardized hardware. No, that's not the case. So it's really hard to say.
Okay.
If you're
running
on, it's
probably going to take more than 10 minutes type of thing, right?
Half an hour for a basic.
Okay.
For a basic VM. So once it's applied the image, the only other thing it does, it looks at the configuration of the source virtual machine and just copies everything across into the new virtual machine, and that's it. That's what it does.
Nice. Do you have any that you've actually gone through the conversion process?
Yeah,
with?
I've actually got two here. So back, if I go back to Hyper-V Manager a second. So Convert Me.
That's what we started with, right?
That was my Generation 1 virtual machine. In fact, that is actually just a clone of the other VM called Generation 1 there. So Convert Me, brackets Generation 2. If I power this guy up here.
Now, as we boot or anything, should we see anything different here, or should the experience be the same?
The first boot will be slightly different for a Generation 2 because we have a new set of hardware inside this virtual machine. So what Windows is going to do is it goes through plug and play. Initially, it can say, oh, I've got some new devices, and here we see it now. It says getting devices ready at this point here. And it gets the boot prompt.
Now, future boots or restarts will not go through that
step?
They
won't go through that step at all. So I'm just going to log on to this virtual machine. And I just want to bring up a couple of things just to show you. I've actually got shortcuts on the desktop here. So, for example, in our MS Info 32, if you start that up, we can see, for example, BIOS mode is now UEFI. We can see Secure Boot is on for this virtual machine. And similarly, if we go into Disk Manager. Sorry, I haven't got it open. Let me bring a shortcut to it. Disk Manager MSC. We can see the layout here is very typical of a UEFI-based system. It's a GPT-based disk, and I can do the same as what I showed on the other Generation 2 virtual machine. If we go into volumes, we can see it's a GPT disk as well.
Nice.
So it's a true Generation 2 virtual machine at this point.
That's great, and again, that's a free tool that we will make available.
It already is available, It's been available since December last year.
Great. So, I mean, as kind of a best practice, as people are starting new virtual machine deployments, should they pick Generation 1? Generation 2, what's kind of the deciding factor for them?
That is a really good question. So there are some things that Generation 2 doesn't support that Generation 1 does. From a pure Hyper-V perspective, the only significant one is RemoteFX. It's not supported in a Generation 2. So clearly, if you need to use RemoteFX, then you've got to use Generation 1. The other deciding factor is probably architecture. So if you need to run a 32-bit operating system, it's not going to run in a Generation 2 virtual machine. They're 64-bit only.
Okay.
The third deciding factor is the operating system itself you're going to run. So Generation 2 only supports Windows 8 and later 64-bit operating systems. Linux support is being worked on at the moment, and in some of the newer kernels that are available, there is full support for Generation 2. But I don't believe any, at this point in time, I don't believe any distros have been released that have full support for Generation 2. But that's coming. It's imminent.
So if someone's doing, let's just say, a standard Windows Server 2012 R2 website deployment, don't need remote FX, would a recommendation be to do Gen 2?
I would use Gen 1. Really very little reason to stick with Generation 1. If it's a brand new deployment, I'd go for Generation 2 in that case, yes.
And do you expect that as we're continuing to work on our product development, features will continue to be added to Gen 2?
Well, this is the important thing. So yeah, it's absolutely. Generation 2 is very much strategic in terms of the Hyper-V team's direction. I mean, obviously, I can't say what we're going to do in future releases.
Of course.
But you can reasonably expect us to put more features into Generation 2 than Generation 1. Generation 1 isn't going anywhere. I do want to emphasize that. It's still there for pre-Windows 8 operating systems. It's there for 32-bit operating systems. You can run them both, Generation 1 and 2, side by side.
On the same host, one or the other.
No, it's not an either-or decision. So Generation 1 is still there, but you can reasonably expect us to put more and more and more into Generation 2 over time.
Great. So where could people go to learn more?
So the best place is probably actually my blog, so
don't worry, that's a totally fair answer.
Okay. So last October or so, I went through a 10-part series explaining about Generation 2 virtual machines in pretty a lot of detail.
So intro, networking, storage, keyboard, kernel, secure boot, FAQ, migration, installing from ISO.
Pretty much everything you need to know is in there at some point in there. So
great. And TechNet's also a great resource.
Absolutely, yes, it is as well.
Yep. So we'll include those links at the bottom of this video as well. Well, John, thank you so much for joining me.
This was great, Simon.
Hopefully more of our customers out there, they'll start using Gen 2, because there's really a lot of benefits that we can take advantage of. And it's going to be kind of our good investment moving forward for the future. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks again.
Okay, you're welcome.